Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
Welcome into the Gus Bradley Show as the head coach is battling a headset cord over the chair. Nice job.
I did. They get done quick enough there, Lars?
Yeah, you're like a cowboy there at the rodeo there.
Quickly recover, huh?
How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. It's good to be back in here with you and Joe and, you know, talk a little football here for an hour, huh?
Well, how's your football team doing? I mean, a disappointing loss this past week against the Texans. I mean, just mainly because, at the end of that first half, you guys looked really good. I mean, competitive. Had the lead going in at halftime. You come out, you got the ball first part of that second half, and to be able to not keep pace with the Texans in that second half had to be disappointing, especially 1 week removed from the Giants game where the second half you guys were fantastic.
Right. Well, you know what? To come up that Giants game and go into this game and the first half, 180 yards of offense, and defensively we're doing well, and we're up 13-10, and we have the ball coming out in the second half. I mean, in the locker room, guys are excited, and come out and not to, you know, there's going to be drives where you don't score every opportunity, but, you know, not to do that. And then they had the long drive on offense. And, it just didn't work out the way we had hoped. And I think that's what was frustrating for our players, and they felt it. And, it's like frustration. I don't mind that. I encourage frustration. It's like an investment. You know, the people that invest in the stock market when it crashes, they're the ones who get frustrated. The ones that don't have any money into it, they could care less.
Right.
And, and I think that frustration shows investment, and that's a good sign.
Well, and I think you kind of alluded to that because Toby Gerhart made a couple comments about the morale was down. And, I mean, you know, holy cow, when you've got a football team that's got two wins after 13 games, I mean, you know, you're going to say some things that kind of signify disappointment. But there's nothing wrong with that as a player.
No. And Toby, he came back and said, well, it wasn't morale, it was more frustration. Well, yeah. Whatever you're feeling, it's okay. Like I said, it's an investment. And, you should be. I think we'd all be more disappointed if we were happy and got over it after a minute and moved on. But it is a challenge now because you do have to quickly recover, especially with an opponent like we have coming up. And I thought our players did a nice job. They were frustrated the first couple of days, and then Wednesday, back at it.
Well, and then part of the news that happened yesterday, Wednesday, was Denard Robinson. I was kind of shocked because earlier this week, Denard Robinson came down to do a Jaguars.com piece. Five things with Denard Robinson. And he walks in and he looks okay. And then all of a sudden, boom, he's headed to IR.
Well, and he felt good after the game. He can remember when it happened, but he just thought, normal, guys
aches
are
and
sore.
Pains.
Yeah, aches and pains. And just came in and said, you know what, take a look at this. And our trainers looked at it and said, well, let's have Doc look at it. And next thing you know, they're doing an X-ray and then an MRI, and he's in a boot. And then it came back with that news.
That's kind of a scary thing, isn't it, for a running back? I remember having a midfoot sprain. It was my first year here in Jacksonville in 1995. Had a Lisfranc and then a second and third metacarpal strain or whatever it was. And that was the most painful injury that I ever had. And that was probably the only injury that I ever had that I really questioned whether I would be able to come back from.
So you had a Lisfranc?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know those are painful now. And that's a long time. I mean, that's 9 months before you can even start activity with the Lisfranc. So we're very fortunate that that's not what Denard Robinson has. You know, the midfoot sprain, you're looking at, I believe what they told me, about six, seven weeks. And, not anything that requires surgery. So, we're fortunate that part of it. But it still hurts, especially Denard. He's such a competitor and wants to play and was really getting after the doctor to find out if there was any way he could still play. But just too much of a chance that could take place.
Any chance that maybe this will force him to tie his shoelaces?
No, I don't think it had anything to do with his shoelaces. But we're going to take a look at that now. Our trainers and I know I talked to him too about just this whole thing. And it's just frustrating because, he, like I said, he is such a competitor and wants to contribute to this team so badly. And not to be able to go these next couple of games really hurts us.
And he's really impressed me because throughout the season, you know, on a plane or whatever, you know, and watching film on the iPad, and he's, you know, obviously the players, they come in and watch it with you guys on Monday morning, and, you know, he walking up to the bathroom or whatever on the plane or going somewhere, and he stops by and he says, "What do you see?" You know, and he wants to see and he wants to know, and so he's sitting there kind of watching it with you. I mean, he's such a young player, and he's so raw at that position. But what I love about him is that he wants to be great. He wants to be better in everything.
He really does. I mean, that's a great example, you know, walking up to the bathroom and stopping and watching ball. So that's what I guess I mentioned about our team is I love their spirit. I love what they're all about. They are learning. Every day is a learning process. And, you know, we're hoping to build up that repertoire of experiences that they can draw from. But to work with guys like this, but, you know, when they hurt, you hurt too along with them.
And with young guys like him, Blake Bortles, Marquise Lee, Allen Robinson, who's on injury reserve, and Allen Hurns, Linder, Bowanko, offensively, you're incredibly young. How do you measure success with that young of a team, and how do you, I guess, not show frustration to a team that is growing and you understand where it's at and where you want it to be?
Well, I think, you know, how does a team get better? How does an individual get better? And we've talked about that as coaches and as players. And, you know, you create a vision. You want that player to come up with, you know, what does it look like? What do you want this to look like when it's all said and done? And, you know, it might be Blake might talk about, hey, I want to play with really good poise. I want to make really good decisions. And then, you know, as a coach, it's your job to keep him connected to it and practice. When you see him do it, point it out. And then when I guess what you can tell is when they start owning it, when they start talking like that's them, that's who they are. And, you know, it's like Linder. Hey, Linder, great job this week against J.J. Watt. You lined up against him 8 times, and he goes, well, that's who I am. You know, I play the guard position, and, you know, what you saw is who I am. And when you start hearing players talk like that, it means they own it. And that's very powerful, and that's one way of telling if you can tell players are getting better.
Boy, that was one guy from watching the film that just really stood out. You know, and Brandon Linder stood out all year long. I mean, in my opinion, he's been your best offensive lineman consistently from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. But to be able to match up against a J.J. Watt – and when J.J. Watt came in on him, it wasn't like he just handled him and held him off for a little bit. He was stoning him.
Yeah, he did a good job. I think, you know, when you look at our offensive line, you know, it was one of their better performances as far as that point.
Let me stop you right there because I was saying the same thing on Monday on the television show Jaguars All Access. And a lot of people look at me and go, how in the world can you say that? How in the world can Gus Bradley say that? How in the world can the offensive line have played well and they lost?
Well, you know, when you look at the whole group, and there's some instances, you know, sometimes you feel like, well, he got sacked, you know, 3 times. Well, it was it the offensive line, or was there other things? You know, maybe a running back mixed the protection. You know, just some things that occurred that had nothing to do with the offensive line and what they were asked to do. So I think, you know, we know the call, we know the scheme, we know what they're asked to do, and the communication that takes place. So we have more information that goes into it. So obviously things that we can do better. You know, we're not where we need to be. But just as a unit, and for them, they came out of it saying, all right, we communicate well, we did some things well, we were on our keys, we moved up the second level better. There's ways to improve. But overall, as a group, we thought, you know, they played pretty well.
And I was trying to, I guess, put a percentage on it because, you know, when you watch J.J. Watt, and, you know, this is not scientific. I don't keep notes and numbers and all that kind of stuff, but – And you may know the numbers, but you look at J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt probably impacts about 35 to 42% of the downs on defense, and that's just my feel. When you watch him every game that he plays, he's a factor on that number of snaps, 35 to 42%. When I watched the game against you guys, he had the 3 sacks in the ball game. He had a couple batted passes, but for the most part, his factor grade, I thought, was lower given the opportunities where he had to beat one-on-one or he had to beat somebody. I thought you guys did a really good job against him.
Well, yeah,
for the most part.
Yeah, and you know, like we said, it's not just J.J. Watt; it's the whole team. But when a guy has that much impact, you better have some awareness where he's at and his strengths and what he likes to do, because he can determine at times the outcome. And I thought we did a nice job. And like we say, we always watch film, and there's things you can improve on. We're encouraged, but not satisfied. You know, I think that's probably the way we look at it. We're encouraged how the offensive line played, but not satisfied with where we should be, you know, as far as a unit.
And one of the guys that played in that game, Sam Young, right tackle, and get to him in just a second, but Austin Pasdor had a ruptured hamstring the week before against the Giants. How's he doing? Did he have surgery yet?
Yeah, he did. It went very well. I just saw him in the training room. He's doing good. And, you feel bad for Austin, because the last couple off seasons now, he's had some injuries he's had to deal with.
Shoulder after last year, and then this year he had the hamstring before the season even started.
Right.
And now the hamstring.
And, I know talking to him last year, he was hoping in the off season to really gain strength and spend a lot of time in the weight room. And, same thing this year. So hopefully with this surgery taking place now, we can, he can quickly recover and get back to doing what he loves.
And Sam Young looked like he played pretty well. He gave up one sack to J.J. Watt, but, I mean, he's J.J. Watt. But for the most part, I thought Sam competed, thought his feet did well, and I thought physically he matched him.
Well, it's not surprising. We thought Sam played pretty well earlier in the season, and that's why we decided to go with him. So for him to be in that environment, I'm very pleased with how he came in. And it was definitely not too big for him. Loved the challenge. Was very excited about it. And he stepped up.
Are you pleased also to kind of move right next to him, Mercedes Lewis? He had, three catches in the ballgame. One of them was impressive because he ended up running over a guy down the field. But are you happy with where he's at since he's returned and the contribution he's been able to make?
Well, he's a very good blocker, and I think we're looking at him as far as getting him more involved with the offense as far as receptions, because he has those opportunities to be explosive, whether it's on a screen or a flat route, and he turns it up. But, I think just encourage, him and us as a unit offensively to look for him downfield. And because he is such a force as a blocker, and he has that same ability as a receiving tight end as well.
Well, you're going to need him this week as a blocker.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about – and we're going to get to the Ravens in a minute, but, I mean, if there was ever a game that you'd want to have your dominant blocking tight end play well, the Ravens this week, they've got a couple edge guys that we'll get to in a little bit that are pretty good. Let's flip over to the other side, Luke Jokel. I thought against J.J. Watt, he played very well. Pressures and one sack against Brooks Reed. Where is he at in his development right now?
Well, I think he's, Luke is really learning just like those other guys. I think sometimes we say, all right, he's in his second year, and, here's our expectation of him. Sometimes I go back and I tell a team we don't want to compare, just compete. But I was a part of Russell Okung's development, at Seattle, and saw that and saw him, how each year he just got better and better as a left tackle. And really there for his first year to say, it's a different level, when you're playing. Well, in Luke's situation, this is really his first year at being left tackle. So from the beginning of the season to where he is now, I think there's a time when – we had conversations, say, boy, Gus, he's just not using his hands well enough, his feet. He's leaning a little bit. But now you're starting to see these last couple of games where he's playing under more comfort. And, I think he's really starting to find himself. So we're, again, encouraged by the strides he's made, but not satisfied with where he's at yet.
All right, well, let's take a break here, folks, on the Gus Bradley Show. And this segment's been brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. More with the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show right after this on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach, Gus Bradley. Gus, the quarterback, Blake Bortles. If you look over the last, I guess you could say, four games, and you kind of compare that and say, look at a sample. Okay, first three games, last three games. The numbers say that his performance has gone down a little bit. Is that the case, or is it there's things that you see on film? Because, you know, offense is very hard to grade, even from my standpoint, because I don't know the play call, I don't know the protections, and I don't know the routes. You know, so even the so-called experts have a difficult time evaluating the quarterback position.
Well, I think, you know, we have the privilege of visiting with them and talking with them and watching film with them. And when you do that, I think, especially like the last three games, you know, I had great conversation with them last night and since the bye week. And, you know, we talk and it's like, you know, Gus, I have more answers now. You know, I know if something comes up, I know what I should be doing. Well, I don't know if I could have said that in the beginning. And, you know, so your conversations are taking place. I seem to make better decisions. I know where to go at the ball. I know where I need to go, what check to get into. And so you're seeing that. And then all of a sudden the turnovers are going away, you know, these interceptions. So I think that process, he's getting better. And he feels like, you know what, I'm improving in those areas. But then there's other areas where, you know, he said I wants to be more consistent. And but, you know, he was completing 70% early, and now he's, you know, dropped a little bit there. But it's the NFL, man. Teams get to watch film on you, kind of get a feel for the whole team, and, you know, they try to take some of your strengths away.
Can you ever go Al Bundy on him?
What's that?
Well, you know, Al Bundy, you know, the old television show, right, with Al and Peg. Okay, and Al Bundy used to talk about his old days playing quarterback at high school or whatever it was. Did you ever play quarterback?
Yeah.
And? Were you any good?
I'm coaching now, Logs. Does that mean anything?
That doesn't mean anything. Maybe you had an injury like Al Bundy.
No. I know the show you're talking about, but
What is that?
Married with Children.
Married with Children, yeah. So you never go Al Bundy on him?
No, I don't go
Al
Bundy.
Did you play quarterback for real?
Yeah, I did.
When did you play?
In high school, and then my first year at North Dakota State, when I walked there, they recruited me as a quarterback. And when I arrived on campus my first day, I went to my locker, and I had a defensive jersey. Those son of a guns, man. They switched me before. I didn't even know it.
All right, so if you had to compare your quarterback skills back in the day of high school, okay, to a current NFL quarterback, who would it be?
You know what? That boy is a long time ago, Logs. You know, just a different game. We ran the Veer, man.
We ran the Veer.
So how can I compare?
So maybe Russell Wilson then. Right? He runs around a lot.
I'm not comparing. I'm not falling for that trap.
You know, it's kind of funny. I played quarterback for a little while, and then they were like, "Look, you're just forget it. You need to play defense and tight end." And I remember my first year ever playing Little League football, when I actually played, because first year I didn't play, wasn't good enough. And I played quarterback the first year, and I think it was for the Lower Loudoun Little League team. It was the C League, you know, the bottom of the barrel. And I played quarterback, and I actually called my own plays until they finally took the play calling responsibilities away from me, because I was calling 17 and 18 sweeps like almost nearly every time. Did you ever call your own plays?
No.
No,
I wasn't. I don't know where. What grade are you when you did this?
Oh, gosh, I want to say that was like back in grade school, first, second, third grade, something like that.
You're calling your own plays.
I was calling my own plays. How crazy is that?
I know if people could call in, they would call you on this, Logs. So I'll do it for them.
But playing the quarterback, a lot of people don't understand. You know, when you say that Blake Bortles has the answers now, it's different to have the answers and then also execute it with speed.
Well, and I think it's clear to say, you know, when you say have the answers, you know, when he goes out there and lines up, he knows what to do, and he knows the call, and I mean, he gets multiple reps at it. It's just that all the different looks that you could possibly see, and, you know, where that read is going to go. You know, he might go through his read progression and get to where he has to go, but now it's like, hey, I've seen this coverage before. I know what they're doing. I know where it's going to go. I don't have to go through my reads. I just know where it's going to go. That's what we mean by, you know, I have the answers now, and they're becoming more clear to me. So what does that allow? It allows for quicker decisions. It allows for more playing with more confidence. And, you know, you just play at a higher level, and you make better decisions because of it. And that's what I think that's what we're seeing in him, is that he's making those decisions where we're seeing less turnovers.
All right, well, let's help people understand the complexity of NFL defenses. The quarterback, when he lines up, ballpark, how many different coverages can he see? in a game?
Well, it's tough. You know, it's by team. You know, some teams will give you multiple coverages. There's
– put a number on it. I mean, let's say a team that's very intricate, how many looks could he see in one game? Like Rex Ryan use a lot.
They could zone pressure and they run three seam. They could run two seam. They could run two plaster. They could run two. You know, there's so many. It's two, but then different combinations where
okay,
maybe two
let's
guys.
Let's give people an idea. Cover two. How many different variations of cover two?
Two cloud, soft two, two man, two bracket, four.
Okay, so you got four or five. You got four variations of one coverage.
Right.
Okay, and then you've got zero, which is zero.
Right. In one, you got one man, okay, where and then you have one Y, where there's plugger help, and then you might have one robber, and then you have another bracket coverage out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, four or five out of
so
cover
four or
one.
Five out of cover one, right. Four or five out of two.
Yeah, and then three deep, you could have three buzz, you could have three, you could have weak side rotation, strong side rotation, weak side hook, strong side hook.
So five.
You could have five or six
okay,
different
so
combinations
we're
there.
We're looking at 13 right there.
Right. And that's
14
time
count
now,
zero.
Now get into your split safety, you got quarter, quarter, half, quarters, you know, cover two. You could have cover two out of an under front rather than an over front, which may look different. They're just endless. It could be endless. And so it's just to say, you know, for Blake, he comes up there and says, all right, here's what they're going to do 90% of the time. This is either going to be one, three, or cover two, or a quarter, quarter, half. Okay, I have a pretty good idea what to do on that. And then all of a sudden they come up and here's 11 robber. He's like, okay. I know that's 11 robber, but I'm going to go through my progression. Where now he's just, you know, identifying it more. And I think in layman's terms, that's what he's going through. Now, you know, we over-exaggerate, you know, five different cover twos and all that. Not every team can do all that and do it successfully. So you get to pare it down. You operate in numbers and percentages. Hey, they might have this many coverages, but really when you look at it, you know, here's what they're doing 90% of the time. And you take it from there. And then, you know, you just got to prepare for that.
That's just interesting because, you know, that's just talking about the back end. I mean, that's right. Not even talking about the front and maybe any kind of checks that he may have to make in protection or anything else.
Right.
I mean, just trying to give people an idea of what goes through the mind of a young quarterback because, you know, you watch Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Tom Brady takes a snap. He's already gone through his progressions before the ball is even snapped.
Right. And you know what? A guy like Peyton Manning, I know this, is that when you're running coverage, he may pick out one guy and say, you know what? This guy's always going to tell me what coverage it is. I've watched all the film up. You don't know as a defense, but one guy is tipping it off, mm-hmm. and that's what he's studying. And you know, you can imagine the detail that he goes through and looks at tape to try to determine what coverage the other team's playing.
And he's probably got an entire book on every defensive player in the league of the guys that he can get that tip from.
That's right.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. And folks, for season tickets, single game tickets, or to learn more about being a Jaguars 365 member, call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. Quick break and more with Gus Bradley, head coach, right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio. We don't have any vocals with it? Okay, we gotta wait.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. This I tell you, brother.
Did you watch that show? Married with Children. I mean, it was one of the most popular television shows on television.
Yeah,
in
no, I watched it. Yeah,
it's pretty good.
Good chuckle here and there, huh?
Al Bundy, one of my all-time favorites. You sure you don't? If you had to evaluate Al Bundy, internally motivated or externally motivated?
Externally.
You think?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show, folks. Jeff Logan with the head coach, Gus Bradley. Defensively for you guys, Cedric Marks doing okay this week? I know that the NFL took a sack away, and I actually texted Ryan Robinson because I remember calling the game. And all of a sudden, I looked at the stat sheet and saw that Ryan Fitzpatrick was sacked twice. And I'm going, I remember the one, but I don't remember the other one. And I actually went back and looked at the defensive stat sheet during the course of the game, and they credited Cedric. And I was like, well, I took too many hits to the head. I must have just completely forgot the play. And then I finally realized that it was the one where he fell down trying to hand the ball off to Arian Foster. And in the stat sheet, he ended up getting credit for that, which, of course, the Houston Texans aren't going to stand for that.
No, you know, I'm so sure they sent it in before they landed.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. So he's at 7.5 sacks. But he's still having a great year.
Wow, really is. I mean, I think he had 4 last year, and then to improve like that. But I think he would be the first one to say that I think his play has been elevated because of those around him. You know, and the guys like Ziggy and Avery and, you know, those guys, Roy, all the interior guys that have played, I think have just helped him. And then the edge guys and, you know, Tyson and Red and Clem and Brancher and Chris Smith, you know, the whole works. I think, you know, have given him a chance to really perform at a high level. And it's great to see.
And it's been great to watch the progress of Ziggy Hood this year, because I remember coming out of training camp, Ziggy Hood came from the Pittsburgh Steelers, was the number one pick there out of Missouri, played the 3-4 defensive end, was kind of read and react. And this year you're actually starting to see him, and well, you have been, but it's taken a little while, to where he's getting up the field.
Right. Well, I mean, here he is. He's been head up, I mean, for so many years in his career. And we knew there was going to be a transition for him to play back on the edge. It was a transition he wanted. He welcomed. He wanted to play on the edge, but it just takes some time. And now to see him, how he's playing. And, I mean, our interior guys last week did a nice job. When you look at their factor grades and how much impact they had on each play or each series, you know, they did a nice job. And it's a credit to those 4 guys.
And the guy that I thought that had a really nice game was Avery Jones.
Yeah. Like I said, the interior guys did a good job. You know, you're rolling quite a few of them. We're playing with 9 defensive linemen, and you know, some teams don't even have 9 up. So to have 9 play, it really helps our depth. And I think a guy like Avery Jones, just look at, you know, how much this has benefited him to be a part of that rotation as well.
And the Texans kind of came out with something that they didn't run a lot or that frequency, and that was the trap game.
Right.
And, you know, you've got a linebacking core that essentially, 3 games under their belt together, and they come out with the trap game, and the trap game always stresses gaps. And Arian Foster had a good day.
He did. You know, I think the trap game, and we call it the wham play, and it's some different fits for the linebackers and the safeties that drop down. So they did a nice job springing that. You know, we had our opportunities. You know, even with it being said, I think they had 40-some carries, and, you know, for 100 and what, they averaged, 4-point-something a carry, and they had that long one of 51. That one really was frustrating because we had a guy right at the point.
Yeah, you had him.
And, you know, we just missed it. So, you know, when a team averages, you know, around 4.0 yards per carry, and still with a 51-yarder, you know, it's tough because you can never get the frustrating thing was that we didn't get the ball back to our offense, or that long drive where they ran the ball well on us. That was the series that hurt us in the second half.
Well, and you get a chance here pretty soon, 1 week from tonight against the Tennessee Titans, and then you've got the Houston Texans, so you'll see them again here pretty soon.
Sure. But so, right now, man, our focus is on
the Baltimore Ravens, right. And we're going to get to that right after this here, folks. A little break here on the Gus Bradley Show, and we will talk about the Baltimore Ravens when we come back right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Jaguar fans, do you want your photo or tweet on the massive new Jaguars video boards? Hashtag JagsGameDayLive and be a part of the game experience. The Social Drive brought to you by the Nimnick family of dealerships. Back here on the Gus Bradley Show this weekend, Sunday, 1 o'clock, Baltimore Ravens. You've got a football team that is really in a fight for their playoff lives, a team that got a lot of guys with the playoff experience. John Harbaugh's had their team in the playoffs 5 of the last 6 years, and their playoffs have just started early this year. I mean, look at that division. Cincinnati Bengals 8-4-1 in the lead. Pittsburgh Steelers at 8-5 have a half game lead on the Baltimore Ravens, so they don't have any wiggle room.
No, you know what? And you know, you kind of judge teams by how they're playing in the month of December, you know, and you know, are they ready to make that little run? And when you watch them, they're really hitting on all cylinders, offensively, defensively, special teams-wise. Really impressed with their front 7 on defense. Really impressed with their offensive line, obviously quarterback. but their offensive line on offense. And just, you know, I've told our team, this is another one of those battle of wills. You know, they want to run the ball. We need to stop the run. You know, we need to eliminate some of their pressure on the quarterback and in a run game. And, you know, so it's a great great opportunity for us.
Yeah, we were just talking during a commercial break about, you know, some of their great players that they have on the roster, and a couple of them that really jump out. You know, I mean, guards aren't a sexy conversation, but the Ravens' offensive guards, Kelechi Osmele, a third-year guy from Iowa State, the left guard, and then Marshall Yonda, who has been, I think, a Pro Bowler the last 3 years. I mean, these two guys are exceptional.
They are. They're interior. Jeremy Zuta, they picked him up from Tampa Bay. He's in his seventh year out of Rutgers. He does a nice job. So when you take a look at those interior three, man, they do some really good things, and they're playing really well. But, you know, one's an eight-year veteran, one's a seven-year veteran, you know, third-year veteran, and they're playing well together. And then, obviously, you got like Eugene Moreau, talented as a left tackle. And then Wagner, their right tackle now, he's, you know, watching him too. So, you know, just a really, really solid offense line. But those interior three, like you talked about, pretty special.
Yeah, they're fun to watch. Marshall Yonda, when it comes to short yardage plays, it's not very often that you want to watch a guard. But when you watch Yonda in short yardage plays, I mean, he's, you know, I don't want to say he's at the level of J.J. White where you watch him, but you actually focus in because you can't help it. Your eyes are drawn to him.
Right. Just, you know, very strong. You know, when he, you know, works the double off and work up the second level, when he punches you, he punches you. And, you know, our pad level is going to be important this week.
And looking at their wide receiving core, before we get to the quarterback, Joe Flacco, Steve Smith, now called Steve Smith Sr., he's now a dad. More mature, he thinks, in his 14th year out of Utah. Certainly he was known for a little bit of an explosive personality in Carolina. Is having a pretty good year for him. 61 catches, almost 900 yards receiving, and really has been the main factor going back to last week because Torrey Smith, who has been perennially their deep threat, looks like he's ailing a little bit, hasn't practiced this week yet.
Yeah, he really is. You know, when I was in Tampa back in 2006, we saw Steve Smith Senior twice a year. And I think what impressed me with him, seeing him that many times, was his explosiveness. I mean, he could take a bubble screen and turn it into something else special. And his competitiveness. He just played really strong for his stature and his size. And then the ability to take the top off of defense. Now, that's what, 8 years later, 7 years later? But you still see those traits. Now, he is competitive. He's playing strong. And he has the ability to make a lot of plays. And I think that it's kind of rejuvenated him. You know, it has changed for him going to Baltimore.
I actually called his first game that he played wide receiver. And that was back when he was with the Carolina Panthers. It was his rookie year. And he was mainly a returner. And at that time, George Seifert was the head coach of the Carolina Panthers. And I remember talking to George Seifert in a production meeting. I was asking him, you know, because Steve Smith had an explosive return the week before I was doing the game. And so I asked George Seifert, I said, boy, I said, after seeing what Steve Smith was able to do as a return guy, do you expect to get him some snaps on offense? And I said, no, we're just going to let him focus in on playing special teams. He's still learning the offense. And I think he ended up having like seven catches for 150 yards. George Seifert obviously didn't trust me.
Or maybe he listened to you, Alex.
I don't think so. That was like on a Friday.
No, I know. He's just, you know, it's a great challenge for our guys. Just because, you know, of his size, you look and you say 5'9", 195 pounds. It's different than an A.J. Green, a Dez Bryant. But, boy, I mean, just so explosive. And to have, what, 61 catches, averaging close to 15 yards a catch, that's still very explosive as a wide receiver.
Yeah, and with three more catches, he's going to be the 18th player in league history to achieve 900 receptions in his career. One heck of a career that he's been able to put together. All right, more here on the Gus Bradley Show right after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman, the head coach, Gus Bradley. This week, Gus, we talked about the wide receivers. We didn't mention much about the tight end Owen Daniels. Dennis Pitta, who's been a very good tight end for the Baltimore Ravens, is on injured reserve with a hip injury again. But they've got a veteran guy who Jaguar fans know very well, played for the Houston Texans for many years, Owen Daniel. A factor in the passing game for the Ravens. He's a good player.
He is. You know, I think their second leading receiver, 40 catches, I believe, on the year. You know, he just has a knack. And I know you've had a chance to see him maybe even more than I have, you know, other than, you know, preparing for this game over the years. But just a very talented. I know Coach Kubiak has a lot of trust in him. And kind of like Justin Forsett, he had him, has that trust in him. But, you know, at Baltimore, and I bet they're pretty thankful they have him.
What does Joe Flacco do best? Because, I mean, the appearance is on the outside, and if you look at the numbers and you read the reports on Joe Flacco, and obviously he had one heck of a Super Bowl run where he was the MVP, his deep ball seems to be what he does best.
Well, he's got a really, really strong arm, really strong arm, and can make any throw. I know that stands out. I think that he's got really good poise, and he makes very, very quick decisions. He knows where he wants to go at the ball, and his release is really quick, so it's hard to get a bead on him as a secondary guy. So he just that poise part, he just looks, you know, he'll look you off, come back, and once he knows where he's going, the ball is out. And that's why they haven't given up many sacks. He gets rid of the ball real quick, a lot of that quick passing game. And the decision-making that he makes, it doesn't give you many opportunities.
You know what's striking to me is when you look at the quarterbacks now in the National Football League, Joe Flacco's quarterback rating is like a 94.5. Back in the day, if you had two quarterbacks that were over 100 quarterback rating, that's about what you had. Now you've got like, I think, four or five guys that are over 100 rating, and then you've got a whole cluster of guys in the 90s. I mean, Joe Flacco at a 94.5 is the 13th rated passer in the National Football League. Is that what the game has become?
Well, you know, with some of these restrictions, you know, so-called, you know, defensively, you're seeing, you know, quarterbacks have some success. But, you know, I don't know all those rankings. You know, here's a guy that throws for 240 yards a game, and he's had, what, 22 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. You know, at the end of the day, they're saying, that's good ball. That's mm-hmm. real good ball. We have 130 yards rushing, so we're getting up to that, close to 400-yard a game range, and we're controlling the ball. Our defense is playing good, and it allows them to win some games. And, boy, but with a guy like that, he can always take the top off of a defense. And, you know, with his speed threats on the perimeter, it's it's a dangerous team to play.
Have you been with a team that's played in Baltimore yet? Whether it been
no.
in Tampa Bay or Seattle?
No,
really?
In Tampa Bay we did not, and Seattle we didn't. We played them in Seattle, I believe, twice, and in Tampa twice, but never in Baltimore.
That's surprising.
Yeah.
Have you ever stopped to kind of look at all the teams? And we used to have a poster up there that had all the helmets of the teams in the league, but the sponsorship was wrong on it, so we had to take it down. Have you ever stopped to look and say, okay, I have played in every city,
yeah.
coached in every city?
You know what, I haven't thought about, but there's some that, have come up, like Cincinnati, this was the first year. But, I can remember in Seattle, we played Chicago like 4 years in a row, and every game was away.
Mm-hmm.
You get into runs like that to where you don't play a certain team at home. New England. You know, I haven't been up there to New England yet. So, I think there's games like that, but then there's other teams that you play so often and so many times, even though they're not in your division.
I think what surprises me every time you go to Baltimore is, first of all, that they've had one of the best franchises in the National Football League since that team moved to Baltimore. But when that team moved back to Baltimore, to see what kind of support and how much passion their fans have in Baltimore – it makes you wonder, how in the world did the Baltimore Colts ever leave?
Right.
Because, I mean, their fans, I mean, they're serious now.
Yeah, they are. And it's a great atmosphere. They are big on football. Jed Fish was up in Baltimore. So, you know, he knows the franchise and the organization, what it's about. But, I know we played them a couple times, like I said, wherever I was at, and just have, you know, the utmost respect for what their team is all about and how they play, the level they play at and the style that they play at. And Coach Harbaugh is a great coach. You know, he has them ready to play every week.
Yeah, with the combination of Harbaugh and obviously Ozzie Newsome, boy, it's been one of the top five franchises in the National Football League since Ozzie took the helm over, and then I think he took it over in 99 or something, and then they've been they've been competitive and one of the best teams in the league.
Right. Well, and he's first-class gentleman. You know, I know I've had an opportunity to meet him now at some of the owner meetings, and
got a lot of wisdom.
Yeah, he does. He does. You're right.
Got a lot of wisdom. All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show, folks, and we come back. We'll talk more about the Baltimore Ravens with the head coach, Gus Bradley, right here on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Back with the head coach, Jeff Loggeman, alongside the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens, a guy that paid his dues, so to speak, John Harbaugh. Bounced around in the college for a little while and then came to the National Football League and really kind of made his mark as a special teams coordinator with the Philadelphia Eagles. And when Ozzie Newsome hired him, a lot of people kind of went, huh? Who? You know, because, I mean, it's not exactly vogue to hire a special teams coordinator, and he did, and John Harbaugh has really done an exceptional job.
He really has. You know, I think you talk about losing a number of his staff members, too, and he's been able to adjust from that and still hire good coaches and come in and keep the system for his players and the continuity. I think, it really is a credit to him.
And is it a credit also to Ozzie Newsome? You know, and an ownership there in Baltimore. I think you got to give credit across the board because they've done a great job.
Well, I think you mentioned it either on the air or when we were off. Just, you know, he's got a lot of wisdom. And, no ego, doesn't get in the way. They make a mistake, they admit it and move on. And you know, maybe if it is with personnel, they move on from somebody and maybe they'll get through a trade or something like that and try to make it right. So a lot of humility in the organization.
You've had a chance to meet Ozzie Newsome.
Yes, I have. Yeah, at the owners' meetings and then at the combine, I believe we had a chance just to talk real briefly. But it always been very cordial, very good to me, even in the short period of time that we'd visit.
You know, it's amazing how some people forget that Ozzie Newsome was a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah.
You know?
Logs, we remember.
I remember Ozzie.
Yeah. But, I'm sure nowadays, you know, the kids. Does that mean we're getting older, Logs?
I think we are. You ever have a chance to meet John Harbaugh?
Yeah. You know, at the owners' meetings, you know, we're in, you have officials' meetings and we meet as AFC coaches. So I've had a chance to visit with him. But I don't know him as well as I know some of the other coaches. But again, another guy that's been very cordial.
Yeah, I like him a lot more than his brother. I won't take you there and I don't expect a comment from you. Obviously, Jim is having his struggles out there in San Francisco and there's all kind of speculation what's going to happen at the end of the year. But anyway, with the 3 weeks remaining, I want to ask you after we come back from break, what do you expect out of your football team? Because there's three games left before you got to take a break, and it's not really the off season, but it's the out of season. And we'll do that with the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Last segment here with the head coach. As the general manager is going to maybe join us. Maybe not. We've only got 2 minutes, Dave. You know, you need to come in earlier, you know, like at quarter till. Yeah, you come on in and say hi. General manager Dave Caldwell.
I came in because you guys had pizza in here.
Oh, is that all? We were hoping that you were going to, throw a little knowledge on us.
Knowledge.
Yeah.
I'm looking for some myself.
Well, hey, stay in here long enough. You'll get it from Logs, and now JP just walked in.
Well, Tony's not here. Tony's not here, so
Pete might bring it down.
Tony and Pete. Oh, here comes Tony.
There he comes. Yeah, let's get an offensive line conversation.
If I ever need questions answered, I go straight to the man who just walked in the door.
That'd be Tony Vaselli, which we will have on here the next hour.
He went right to the pizza.
Just real quick, Dave, how you doing?
Doing well. It was a good week.
League meeting?
Yeah,
right?
Down in Dallas. Just got back. And productive seeing all the people from the league office. And they dropped a lot of knowledge on us. And now we got to comprehend it all and go to work.
And ballpark, I mean, if amount of information that you get that needs to be utilized by an organization such as y'all's, mm-hmm. How much information is that?
It's quite a bit. It's a lengthy book. It's in-depth. But it's really more on the broad spectacle of things for like Tim Walsh, contract negotiations and some guidelines
cap
along
wise
those.
Yeah, cap and wise stuff.
And where we are with our cap situation, which is in good shape.
All right. Well, we look forward to maybe getting you on at some point right here on the Gus Bradley Show to maybe espouse some of that knowledge that you learned at the owners' meetings with us.
That'd be great. I look forward to it.
Thank you, Dave. And Gus, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We'll talk to everybody next week, same time, same place right here on the Gus Bradley Show. And stay tuned locally for Jaguars Thursday with me and JP Shadrick and the pride of the Jaguars, Tony Vaselli.